Presidio Bitcoin Jam. It's Friday, so it must be Friday at noon and ready to hang. How are you guys doing?
Great. Doing good. Doing good. What's going on with you, DK?
Miss you from the studio.
Yeah.
Yes. I can't wait to get back. Well, I'm over out in the Eastern Sierras, as I often am for the summer. Had a good chance to hang with you guys back through a lot of July, but I'm back here now, and then we'll be back in SF in studio in early September, I think.
Great.
So looking forward to getting there and getting more mountain bike sessions and more, sauna sessions and everything.
Well, I've heard a rumor that the early September Presidio Bitcoin Jams might happen in the sauna. I don't know. I think our producer Alex...
Are we going to set up a full studio? A waterproof, heatproof...
We'll have to chat with Alex about that out here, but NVK may come through, because I hear he may want to see what the sauna studio looks like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, banya.lol. Don't miss it. So we've got a big list of topics. Say, I think we had 15 things, fast and furious, everything's going. There's so much going, but I feel like I'm way under informed about everything. So I'm going to use this as a chance to just kind of listen and learn and get educated about all the chaos going on in the world.
Nice pop out, dude. For not doing your homework.
Someone didn't prep.
Exactly. and did your dog happen to eat any of your...
My dog ate all my preparation notes, yeah.
So, yeah, we do have a lot of topics. I don't know what to start with, but I'm going to throw out one maybe that wasn't in our tweet.
Yeah.
Spicy.
Perfect.
I want to have the Play Store. And what Callie has been tweeting about trying to get BitChat.
Yeah.
Because we talked about that a little bit, and it raised policy questions for an app store that I hadn't considered before, and I still don't have answers. So,
and let's set it up from the beginning in case people haven't caught all
the context here. So, BitChat, which is probably something we want to talk about as well today, new open source project that Jack Dorsey created and published. He built it for iPhone, published all the software, free open source license. And then Callie took the code, created an Android code base, and made it available for Android. Someone else took the code and then submitted it to the App Store and got it in, or sorry, the Play Store, into the Google Play Store and got it into the Play Store. Callie then started tweeting a lot about that.
And was that other one called ByteChat, not BitChat?
No, it was also
BitChat. Called BitChat.
Oh, it was. Okay.
There's also a ByteChat, but
that's separate. Okay.
You're getting ahead of the story here, DK.
Sorry, I did too much homework.
You're more prepared.
You're
more prepared. I didn't even know about ByteChat.
So, and then Callie's complaining because, the authoritative source or the real source was getting denied then. But then that raised questions for me, even though I know Callie did the work to create the Android port. So it seems intuitive that he should be the one to be able to submit it to the App Store. It's a free open source license. So this other person, and I don't know who that is, but the other person that submitted it and got it in the App Store, why doesn't that person have the right to get it in the App Store? So then there's been weeks of hassle there. And the ByteChat thing, I think one of the pushbacks that Callie got from Google was that offensive language.
Right.
BitChat, you can also pronounce it bitch at. And then,
are you serious? That was one of their complaints. Yeah.
So it was getting denied for that. That's why some other person submitted ByteChat, which got past the BitChat or bitch at language.
I'm actually impressed. So this was in theory an Android reviewer, someone was paid probably to go through this. And because whoever did that, that was not obvious to me when I saw BitChat.
Well, I think Callie likes to sort of play that aspect up. At least I've
seen. I hadn't heard BitChat until you mentioned that on the show 2 weeks ago. I mean, it's funny and hilarious, but
I also learned that those words in French are the male and female genitalia, bit and chat. Maybe I didn't pronounce it the French way, but
I also had not heard of that. So
you've been doing a lot of homework.
I learned it in the comments thread. Yeah. I was trying to get to the bottom of him here.
Yeah, I feel so.
He's pulling out all these nuggets here.
Are you going to tell us about Ani next? Did she help you with that?
Oh my God, let's not go there. That Elon has been nuts this week.
He's been having fun.
So, So the policy question that raised for me is when you do have free open source software, who does have the right to get an app in the App Store, and then like what, how should that be reasoned about? I did a little bit of LLM sleuthing to try to figure out what are the guidelines and policies today for the Play Store and the App Store. What I learned, and again, it's LLM, so not necessarily fully accurate, but it seems plausible. If you own the trademark, that gives you a lot of power in getting that. Then you can then get your app named that in the App Store because you own the trademark. But if you don't own the trademark, then even if you're the copyright holder of the code, if you licensed it free open source, owning the copyright actually doesn't have much sway at all. Hmm. And of course, if you extrapolate that further, it can get diluted because if you're the sole copyright holder and you initially do a code dump and open source it, sure, you have 100% of the copyright, but most of open source projects over time, it gets diluted. There's many contributors. Right. And so I even have a PR merged on...
I saw that, actually. I was looking at the GitHub today and I saw Mr.
Although, to be
Steve
fair,
Lee.
It was the white paper, not the code.
Dude, there's like five people. You're one of them.
He's also a Bitcoin contributor. He's a core dev, you know?
Bitcoin core. I know that.
This was before vibe coding.
They sneak in with these trivial PRs to
hey, I think
add to my resume. an open source code base, copyright gets distributed, but whether it's concentrated or distributed, the free open source license gives license to other people. As long as you follow the license, give proper attribution or whatever you need to do for the license, you have just as much right to distribute it as the person who wrote the code or people who wrote the code. Mm-hmm. So it kind of calls into question, like, why should Callie's app get precedent over the other person who published it? And I don't know the answer to that. Now, I've heard also that the initial one that got submitted there, that it might have been scammy in some way. I actually don't know the facts there, but assuming it was, well, then that's reason alone, right, to pull it. But I'm more interested in the general discussion here. Like, we have this concrete example, but just in general, let's say Max writes software, mm-hmm, publishes it, open sources it. You don't trademark a name, but you call it, you know, whatever, Max app. And then I come along, submit Max app to the store.
Add a period, publish it.
You know, and then you get offended by that, and it's like, hey, but you don't own the trademark. So who has the right to have that app in the App Store? And so if we argue that, well, you know, the early bird gets the worm and the first mover gets the App Store, okay, that could be a policy. But then let's say in this example, I stop maintaining it. Like I submitted it, I put it in the store, and then I just don't touch it. And then meanwhile, you just keep improving the app and there's all kinds of new releases and functionality and bug fixes.
Yeah.
And the only thing you can do is submit the app that's better now, mm-hmm, under a different name.
Right.
So that doesn't seem fair at all either. So what do we think? Do we know anything more about the actual policies and guidelines now? And if not, what do we think they actually should be?
Well, to me, this highlights, we had a bit of this discussion, I think, last week, but I mean, this is just the problem with having any centralized point of trust, right? At the end of the day, I mean, it's a very, I guess, you know, I think with any App Store policy, there's always going to be some human judgment piece, right? Like it's all, with the Domus release, with the Primo releases, with all these different releases, like sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Why? Maybe you got the right reviewer, maybe you didn't. And in this case, I mean, I am sort of sympathetic to, if there was something scammy, obviously that's something that should be pulled directly for that. And I guess that's the job of the reviewer to figure that out. But
how do you decide scammy even?
Well, if someone like loses their money or something, I don't know. Like,
well, exactly. No, I mean, but I mean, like, what if I take the, like, so Jack, you know, composes the iOS one, submits it. I pull the open source software. I use exactly that same software and I put in a paywall and I say, hey, use Jack's new app. It's, you know, $10 a month. Is that like scammy? I mean, it feels scammy to me, but like, it's not like an outright scam. It's just somebody kind of, you know, optimizing around kind of a brand that's growing.
Yeah, that's a good example.
It's a great example. And I think it comes to, I mean, so I think there's two areas, right? There's like the letter of the law, and then there's the way the world, I think most of us think should work. So the letter of the law is, I mean, if it's totally free and open source, and that includes for commercial usage, then I don't think anyone did anything wrong, right? And unless, again, they did something where they stated one fact, like, hey, you know, deposit some Bitcoin here or whatever, and then they just steal it. Okay, well then that if there's like a lie and something's violated, that seems like something would get pulled. But otherwise, if they want to pay wallet and the software is totally FOSS, like I don't, that's not illegal, right? But to me, the broader question is like this, how should the world work? And it's very obvious to me that anyone should be able to publish whatever they want. And this is where we come back to Web of Trust, right? Like if some random guy wants to publish Kali software and then Kali publishes it and they both publish it from their private keys, which have organic reputation, in the ideal world, and this is what, you know, Zap Store is trying to build. And we talked about maybe trying to attack the old world app stores is not the right sort of vector, the better vectors for LLMs, whatever. But in any way you want to distribute media or software or any kind of information, if you're doing it with a key that has reputation, anyone should be able to publish whatever they want. And I, as a user, should be able to decide with my own algo which one I want to download.
I mean, haven't we dealt with a lot of these issues in Bitcoin itself? Because people take like free open source code, they make the name Bitcoin, they make a logo for Bitcoin, they say this is the canonical one, then people make BSV and B whatever, XBTC and all these other things that sort of draft off of the brand recognition, but then take it in a different direction for their own purposes. BSV and what was it, Bitcoin Gold, there's all kinds of...
I don't know what XBTC is, but I'm curious. I'm intrigued.
Tell us about your Bitcoins, Deacon.
How's your trade going?
Yeah, exactly.
Wasn't this one Extreme BTC or I forget what it was. I thought this was in like the Extended BTC or Ultimate. Bitcoin Ultimate, wasn't that a thing?
There were so many diamonds.
That was a implementation of Bitcoin. Like a
fork. Oh, okay. So that was... Yeah. Legit. See, so I don't even know, right? Well, like, which ones are legit and what's
I don't know if I'd call it legit. I mean, it was a legitimate fork of Bitcoin Core software, whether you like that version of Bitcoin.
So it's like a Knots competitor.
Yes. It was I believe it was Coinbase's Knots competitor.
Okay, yeah.
Back when Knots was called, what was it? Luke originally called it like Luke Bitcoin or something. Or it was literally named after his.
Well, that's a more accurate representation.
But my point is we sort of have some precedent for how these things work and how names and confusion works in the Bitcoin land. The BitChat thing is different in some ways, but are there parallels or what can we learn from the parallels with how Bitcoin worked and works and kind of continues to build consensus around the real one Bitcoin that we all believe and care about versus kind of all the other kind of brand draft, you know, kind of brand affinity scamming that happens?
At least for the mobile phone app stores, the same issue exists. I mean, they don't allow multiple apps with the same name. Mm. There's already an app called Bitcoin Wallet, so I can't come around and submit Bitcoin Wallet. So to me, it seems like, is it fair? Well, it depends on, or it seems to me like in today's world with the rules we have and the app stores we have, getting trademark before you publish open source software seems important. Mm. If you want to, if you're intending to be a good steward of the software code base, which you probably are if you created it and decided to release it to the world as a public good,
right?
You probably want to get trademark so that you can protect that. Because even in the case, like, yeah, if someone comes along, submits it before you, they put a paywall, it's not scammy, but it's not what you intended. And then you can't get your app in the app store, that seems like a problem. Or in the scenario where the person submits it, gets in the app store, and then they never maintain it. Like, I actually don't know what the current policies are from the app stores. Do they have any way to protect against that?
I think you can provide, like you said, like if you own a trademark for BitChat.
Yeah. I mean, without the trademark.
Without the trademark.
You're saying if you don't have the trademark. Yeah. I don't know how.
If the first mover never then maintains it, and there's like a tremendously better version of this, of the same software code base, the same name, and it can't get in the app store, that seems like society loses.
Totally. Right.
So, and even from an Apple or Google perspective,
they'd probably want
they're losing. They want the better version.
Maintained
right?
Software that people.
I don't know what the right answer there is. It seems like though in today's world, the best practice is get a trademark.
And getting the trademark takes a little bit of effort and money, right?
Like it's not money, time.
Wait, how long, how much?
You have to do a search. You have to do an international search. You have to apply. And there's a ton of, when you work with a lawyer to do this, it's minimum $5,000.
Yeah. Are you serious?
So that creates a barrier.
It's not a great, like,
especially,
oh,
if you want, especially if you want to do, go global.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you're then obligated to defend the trademark.
Yeah.
So if anyone abuses it later, you might not want to lawyer up. You might not want to go through that hassle, but you have to protect the trademark or you'll lose the trademark.
Yeah.
So then we can talk about delete IP, right? Let's just get rid of trademarks. Yes. But then we do get back to the problem of like, okay, well then how do we solve the problem we're talking about? You've proposed, just anyone can publish whatever they want. So let's explore that more. So in some hypothetical store.
Yeah. And it's not hypothetical, actually. Zap Store is doing this now.
Okay. So in a store that anyone can submit anything, then you can get Sybil attack. So there could be literally be a billion bit chats in the store. Mm-hmm. So.
But that doesn't bother me at all, right? Because the whole thesis of Zap Store and like the idea I'm going with is they're all signed by a private key and those private keys have your reputation, right? So it all comes back to Nostr and the web of trust, or even without Nostr, just web of trust in general, right? Like let's say there's a million different people that submit a version of BitChat and I know that Callie is the guy that submitted the first piece of software, I'm going to use the Callie version all day, every day. And even if it's a new piece of software where I don't know the name, I'm just going to be like, okay, well, what is DK using? I'm going to use theirs because I trust them and, you know, whatever.
Or even if you don't know anyone involved, but it's a situation where like one person's like not maintaining.
Totally.
And then there's a big uproar. Like people, like let's say the iPhone version is up to date and the Android version isn't. And then there's just a lot of social media and communication about that. People are pissed off and there's a movement there. Then they could boost the reputation or score or whatever of the latest version on Android and people would use it.
And the interesting thing here is like, look, again, I come back to the problem is it's all the centralized choke points. And I don't even think it's all like Apple and Google being necessarily bad actors. Like obviously they want to take their cut. And in my dream world, IP is gone. No one can take their cut like by being sort of a troll on the bridge. It's all open. But even looking from Apple and Google's perspective and giving them the benefit of the doubt, you made a great point as well. Like it hurts them if they take the version of BitChat that's not being maintained. Like they would much rather use, you know, quote unquote, the popular shelling point for that app. But it's also like, it's just a pain in the ass for them too. They have to hire reviewers. I guess eventually AI will do more and more of this for them. So maybe that's the solution. But like, I imagine Apple and Google would like to say, everyone submit and we're going to surface the one that has the most stars or downloads or whatever that is. Like, it seems like they would prefer that.
Cool. I'm satisfied.
Yeah. I mean,
thanks.
But again, I think to me that the challenge is, and this is what you were talking about last week, DK, is like, we have a cool version of Zap Store. Obviously you can only, I think, use it with the APK on Android. Like it's not user-friendly at all. The problem is, you know, you can get the cypherpunks playing with this stuff, but the normies, myself included, that are, you know, primarily downloading from Apple or Google are not going to download this weird new stuff. So I think it kind of comes back to what we were discussing last week. The best chance for a world like this to thrive is just to like completely shoot for the new ones. Like in the world where the LLMs are pulling the apps, like how do we make sure that that is radically open, incorporates web of trust? I think that's our best shot. Like I strongly doubt, sadly, that we're going to solve this problem with Apple and Google. I would love to be wrong, but I don't see it.
And so what does that look like though? Is it that you're relying on an LLM that you're chatting with to do the kind of web of trust investigation on your behalf?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of like what you were saying last week. It's like, I don't know exactly what the form factor is going to be. And this actually gets to one of your topics you wanted to discuss. But like, imagine if the phone is no longer running, I guess we can talk about it now. You mentioned, you know, Elon saying that the phone no longer is going to run apps, but it's basically just going to be an interface for your assistant, for your Ani, to help you pull the software that you need to do whatever you need in the world. And so in that world, you may conjure on demand and say, hey, I need to be able to communicate with other people that are using the whatever white noise protocol, which is what's happening beneath BitChat. And you say, I want you to download the necessary tooling or whatever you need to access this protocol. And first, maybe you could say, surface me a UI right now that shows me the different, whatever, the five most popular versions of this protocol, and show me which of my friends are using which, or which of the people that I follow on Twitter or Nostr or whatever are using that. And I choose that one. Or I just say, Grok, Ani, whoever, do this for me. You know my preferences. If there's a problem, I'll talk to you and let you update it. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but I actually think, yeah, I think you had some pretty good ideas around that last week. So,
yeah, we'll see. I think a lot of these things are going to be, you know, they need new interfaces, and I think the idea of like competing against the old style of like take an app store and make it open or make it decentralized probably doesn't make as much sense. I have been thinking. I think we had a topic we were talking about. GitHub and sort of how it's sort of related is how does, you know, I think was GitHub recently the leadership change within Microsoft. So now it's more tightly held or maybe more even more centrally controlled than maybe it was before. I thought I saw some.
Their CEO left and they're not going to replace the CEO. Instead, GitHub reports straight to the core AI team, which suggests less independence than they've had the past 6 or 7 years or whatever.
Mm. Right. And we've talked about the risk of centralized GitHub to, you know, Bitcoin, because Bitcoin lives on GitHub and that's where people go to find it often. So if Microsoft decided they didn't like Bitcoin, you'd kind of wonder, well, what are you going to do about that? So I think having a new place to host that would be interesting. But I think it all kind of touches on similar themes, which is like, how are we going to access information in the future? How is software going to be built in the future? How is collaboration around software going to be built? And all of these, in a sense, are like themes that weave and feed into each other that probably determine somewhat like the final interface for this. But it does feel like something chat-based seems like a likely interface to access it, but I don't know that it's going through a centralized provider chat or if there are, maybe there's something like an open source, maybe it's like a Nostr style chat where you can chat into the service and then it dispatches to a bunch of different services, but you control sort of which services it chooses to use. And some of them are maybe open source and some of them are closed and they have different kind of cost, quality, performance trade-offs. But I
think one thing that could look really cool around this is, you know, I like this idea that maybe the future is like a mashup of, you know, something a chatbot can access, but maybe a mashup of GitHub and an app store. Because it's like, what's the difference between the software and the app itself? Well, increasingly, if you don't actually need to run the app on your phone, there kind of is none, right? And so maybe it looks more in the direction of GitHub. I could see, like, if it's a very simple first example of this, imagine you have just like a giant database. And I guess what you need to agree on is the NIPS or the standards, like if I'm thinking in Nostr terms. And so what you would do is you would say, okay, I publish a piece of information, right? So the standard is there's a piece of information that's the payload or whatever. Then you have the private key or the associated with the public key who published it. Okay, great. And then with that, you can start to do some of the reputation stuff. And then maybe you have to agree on like the kinds, and maybe that's even too restrictive. Maybe there's like a more flexible way to do that, but you could do the kinds, right? And so as an example, imagine one kind is, a mini app or a piece of software. Great. So I know these are all mini apps that are compatible with the specific chatbot, Grok, or whatever that I'm using. And then maybe you can have other kinds of, you know, pieces of information as well. It's like, yes, this is, you know, a long form essay. I guess we already have that, our kind one. This is a short form, you know, piece of information. And like at some level, I guess what's cool about this is the more flexible you could make this giant database, like there is no difference except, I mean, there really is no difference between a tweet, an essay, and a piece of code. It's all just text.
Right.
So basically,
so how do we get there?
Repository. I don't know what that first step is, but I mean, one way is just maybe building better tools to like surface and search different kinds that different people publish, and maybe also propose a kind for software, which I don't know if the guys working on the Nostr GitHub clones already did that. But
Is there anybody building like application development, let's call it like vibe coding tools, where the ultimate destination for serving that is on Nostr?
Yeah,
it feels like
I think Alex Gleason is Ditto and or Soapbox. I haven't played with it much recently, but I think he's probably. He and Pablo are probably furthest down that line.
Because it feels like
if you're listening to Pablo or Alex, let us know.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like something in that vein is sort of like helps people create things and helps those things kind of naturally live in an uncontrolled environment and helps more collaboration where people can sort of hop in and take it in their own direction. But it sort of lives on a substrate. If it can live in a substrate that doesn't require like, okay, you know, clone the repo from GitHub and I'll run it on my own servers. Like it's a much more, you know, either that environment or something like a Replit, which is very easy to use and wonderful for prototyping, but ultimately you're kind of in their ecosystem and you're not, in a sense, like you're not as open as you would be if you sort of could do a similar type of thing in a more Nostr native way.
But what do you mean even Substrate, right? Because I think you could have like different interfaces along the way as you progress on this, but like, it isn't the interface itself just basically a database, just like piece of information, a kind, and an author, and that's all just stored on Nostr relays?
But you need some code to execute somewhere. Like, what do I want to do a query to pull the data and use it in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So is that another, is that like a function of a relay? Is that another type of decentralized relay-like infrastructure that's more like a code operation infrastructure? Do we, like, I think Holebunch explores doing this in the web browser via JavaScript and sort of has all the apps served among peers in the you know, JavaScript in the browser. Mm. So I think we need some idea of like, where does the compute happen, not just where's the data stored?
Quick question, Alex, can you click comment on this? We're trying new software.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Us up with something
new. There we go. All right. We do have an audience.
Oh, nice.
Oh, Austin.
Well, perhaps we'll start. I wasn't going to discuss this too much, but my guy, Andy, is asking me in the chat if I am all right. Andy, we'll have to chat more. I am, in fact, not all right.
Why would you not be all right?
Oh, you don't know this. I won't go into all the details, but okay. Andy took me for a ride this week, and I am currently in a boot. So on the plus side, I told Steve I look like Tyrese Hunter when he was out for the Memphis game. So I got some swag. I'm rocking the boot with swag. But no, I'm not.
I thought you said Tyrese Halliburton, but it could apply to either.
It could
Tyrese.
Apply to either. Yeah. Anyway. I always thought I kind of looked like a Tyrese.
All right, cool. Back on track.
I haven't caught up on all of Austin's participation here. Did you guys catch Wild West App Store? Doesn't bother me if things are signed. People figure it out. Any little tidbits there, or do you want to change topic?
Yeah, let's move on. We got a lot of topics.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing, maybe it is before we move on. I thought that in Callie's tweet, he'd mentioned something about how he is the copyright owner. Does that ring a bell?
No.
But we already discussed that, though.
Well, I didn't understand that part. That's why I was just revisiting.
He is the copyright holder of the Android codebase because he created it. But
I see.
But anyone... Yep. Who contributes more is the copyright holder for whatever they contribute. Okay. And also, like I said, my LLM sleuthing suggests that doesn't play a role in deciding who gets to submit to the App Store.
Yeah. Well, just one last comment on that, and maybe we can chat more about BitChat at a higher level because there's a lot to say on that. I think that anything that requires an open source dev, particularly a NEM, to spend substantial money, anything over, I mean, really any amount of money or a substantial amount of time or even like talk with a lawyer. Like, do you really think the NIMs want to talk with lawyers? Like, that to me is a non-starter. And so, I mean, I get it. And if that's what you have to do to kind
that's of... today's world, I think, but I agree. It's big friction and barrier.
If you have to do that to be compatible with the legacy world, so be it. But like, we have to aim for a world. And maybe AI is part of this. I mean, you're already using LLM. I was using LLM as a doctor this morning. You're using it for a lawyer. Maybe that helps solve a lot of the problems. But like, it's a non-starter moving forward if we want the free and open world that I think all of us do. So,
yep.
Cool. Can we talk about BitChat in general? Not just the copyright. Let's talk about BitChat. Okay. Because I'm getting fired up about this. So I just want to mention maybe a little bit what I'm getting excited about. I know Steve, as the resident contributor here, hope I have a lot to say on BitChat as well. But I just have to say, it is so fucking cool. And, you know, honestly, shout out to Jack, because that man always has a vision. And like, I didn't see him taking this step, but the more I see it, the more I see the way the pieces are coming together, and it's fucking cool. So for those of you who don't know, so BitChat, just as a reminder, it started off as a mesh network, right? So you download BitChat, you can chat with other people that are within whatever the radius is in your mesh, which is your Bluetooth. And in theory, you can route messages over different hops in your Bluetooth network. A lot of cool things you could do with that. We discussed on prior episodes of PBJ, if you want to go find the earlier episodes, where might this be used? I believe concerts and other peer-to-peer exchanges were some of the ideas that we bandied about. The coolest thing, though, that just dropped is, I don't know if it was just yesterday or today, but Jack announced geohashing. And geohashing is super dope because basically when you engage in your first peer-to-peer or like local mesh chat, now that also includes with it a geohash, which you can think of as like a zip code for wherever you are on the internet. But it's cool because the zip code doesn't like dox all of your exact GPS
location. Wherever you are in the internet or wherever you are in the world?
Sorry. Wherever you are in the physical world. wherever you are in the physical world, but accessing, I guess, over the internet to reach different people. So what's super cool now is you have like a zip code, but it's not a super doxing zip code. And then you start thinking, well, what kind of cool stuff can you do with that? Well, one cool thing you can do with that is there's an app I love called Radio.Garden. It's one of my favorite apps of all time. I found this, by the way, on Stack News. So shout out to the cypherpunk community that always finds the cool stuff. And Radio Garden allows you just like basically like take a little cursor and move it anywhere around the globe and listen to all the radio stations and all the cool like local, you know, whatever radio stations in that frequency. So you can go to Argentina or Japan or whatever. It's awesome. I love that app. And like I could immediately, that was the first thing that clicked for me. I was like, oh, this is super cool. I could just go and zoom out. We have our tiny, you know, whatever little district here in San Francisco. I wonder what people are talking about in Buenos Aires. I wonder what people are talking about in Seoul. I wonder what people are talking about in Nigeria. Obviously, it's not everywhere yet. But Steve showed us, I think, a heat map this morning. It's like popping off in different parts around the world. So obviously, there's a lot more you can do with it.
But how does that work? So if I, you know, if I were at PBJ right now, I would obviously be able to connect to you via mesh. Since I'm not there, can I access? Do I have to talk to you to figure out what the geo hashes for?
You can teleport to any location in the world from where
you are. So they all listed in the app what all the available locations are?
That's actually a great question. So let me check right now. As I recall, you can choose some specific areas. So I'm going to go right now. So I can find in real time, I can choose to go like to my country or to my district or whatever. Right now, you do have to plug in specific zip codes or geo hashes. And so the most popular one right now is 21M, three characters. And there's currently 47 people in that chat.
That sounds like that's not a location, that's a topic.
Oh, okay. So maybe you can do both topics and locations.
Well, it sounds like a topic, not a location.
It's a good point. This could be a global chat. My guess it would be this would be like for everyone. I'm not sure how they created that, but it's cool. I mean, I'm looking right now and in real time, I'm seeing 47 people. There's like a tremendous amount of conversation. Some Arabic, some English, some definitely. Well,
I'm going to be a little more critical about this. I mean, Google Buzz launched 15 plus years ago.
Right.
I was part of that launch, and like it's cool initially when people all around the world are geotagging their messages and you can pop into those different locations. But for that to be success, I mean, first of all, Google Buzz was a failure. And for it to be successful is more than just enabling geo hashes and geo tags, right? Because the quality of the conversation, it matters tremendously.
Totally.
So I'm not saying BitChat's going to fail at this.
Right.
I'm just saying like the details really matter. And so because if it becomes popular, it's going to get, the quality will get diluted. And we kind of saw that on Clubhouse a few years ago as well. Clubhouse was initially
cool,
amazing.
Cool rooms.
And then when it grew, then the quality decreased. So, and also I'd hope that BitChat is careful about introducing this because the mesh network, like with the mesh network, I see a path for high quality signal.
Right.
Because you start with people who are physically proximate to you. You likely have some kind of affinity with them, if not the location, the event you're at, or you're literally next to them in person. So there's all kinds of reasons to believe that's going to be substantial relationship formed. And content. And then I really liked the Nostr integration because then you can then carry over to communicate with that person wherever that in the world, but you start with this initial high quality.
Totally.
So I love all that. Little concerned with the stuff because let's say that teleporting to a location, if like almost all the people that are part of a particular community in that location aren't at that location. That just, and they're not just reading, but they're writing.
Right.
Then it doesn't, like, does it really have anything to do with that location?
I worry
about the quality.
Should be a two-tier system then, where if you're at the location or you're favorited by people at the location, you can both read and write. And if you're just like an observer, like you want to go to Buenos Aires or whatever, you can read everything, but you can't really chat, or maybe you can chat in like a secondary side chat, or like almost like the distinction between the stage and the audience in Clubhouse. I wonder if you had like the location and the spectators kind of with a stronger distinction so that they don't sort of get the pool muddied.
Yeah, I agree with that, or at least exploring that. Indication in the UI for the people within a room or channel, exactly, or whatever it's called, just have an icon next to them, like that indicates they are actually there versus they're not.
I agree.
That should be explored as well. And actually, let me plug. we've talked before in the show once or twice about Presidio Bitcoin's going to host a Bitcoin Design Week the middle of September.
Badass.
The week of September 15th to 19th. So people should check that out in general, but I'll, a segment that I'll be leading is on BitChat. So like BitChat design sprints, vibe coding, and exploring things like we're talking about right now. So I'd love to explore with talented designers, attract Silicon Valley and designers, big tech designers to come to help explore, how should BitChat, proceed to this and solve some of these problems, ensure that the quality of the conversations are high.
Yeah.
Take advantage of all the reasons you're excited about it.
Totally.
I share that enthusiasm. I had that same enthusiasm with Google Buzz and then saw how it fails. Totally. And then same with Clubhouse, saw how that fails. I mean, so I'm only pointing out that it's a really
totally
big challenge. So how can we best guide BitChat to avoid those pitfalls?
I love all that. And I think we should actually take one step back, because you mentioned, and I don't think we've explicitly, at least on this show, explained that it uses Nostr, right? And so the key piece is when you're local with someone in person, you speak over Bluetooth, so over the mesh. However, once you leave, so let's say, DK right now, if we've already favorited each other, which we did when you were in the office, although I think there might be an issue, we have to refit. I don't know. But anyways, still early.
My cipher pedo has gone to sleep. It has a little moon icon.
I don't know who you're talking about, bro. Don't be
lost. Sorry, this was some doxing,
Yeah, shit, live too. Fuck, man. I doxed myself a long time ago. What's cool is, as Steve mentioned, you're then in the background communicating over Nostr relays to share those messages. And so there's so many cool things about all this. And I should mention, right? Like, first of all, I love that you're going to do this during Design Week. There's so much to explore here. I'm just like obviously saying some things get me excited today. But what excites me the most is, one, there's a critical mass. There was last week or 2 weeks ago, 100,000 people plus who have downloaded it around the world. I'm sure it's much more now as it's popping off again. So there's interest in the app. The app looks nice. It works. It's not super like slow and buggy, which, I love Nostr and I love all the cool stuff we have there. But a lot of times it starts off pretty, hood for the cypherpunks, which is fine. But this is like something I can like show to a normie and they can like get it. They'll use it. It's cool. And so what I see is we have I see the potential. We have a hotbed, a core of people who are using Nostr. And I would argue, maybe other than Primal and Domus, maybe it's already even overtaken them. This is the most used Nostr app in the world right now. And no one knows that it's using Nostr, which I love. And so what I see coming next to all this, and okay, some of the questions you asked, right? Like, how do you know if someone's in that location? All these different things. That to me is the exact same question and the exact same answer as the App Store, right? Like the way we're going to do that is Web of Trust. And I don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but it's going to be like, okay, well, this person, DK, Max, and Steve all mutually favored each other. So that, builds out to saying, we know that at least according to these guys, they started in San Francisco, and then you kind of build from there.
Well, meaning you're trying to address spoofing, location spoofing, or?
That's one way.
Because how big a problem? I mean, because the obvious answer is just get your location from the phone,
yeah,
and then that's your location. But location spoofing, it doesn't seem like a widespread problem to me. Like most people don't install that software to.
Totally. And I don't even know
if it's possible on iPhone.
There's a comment right now from Program Scarcity, which says, how easy would it be to spoof a device's BLE address? So I just want, because we're talking about it, I just want to raise, I think it would not be, my guess is that the app would not be able to find that because you would need to have some device locally that is a BLE device. So you can't just spoof it like on the internet. You actually need a physical device present to be able to join the mesh network, right?
He says, then infer from network topology. What is this? I suppose you might need to learn how to analyze BLE signal path. Interesting.
But you'd need to be like a BLE chip you'd need to have in the physical presence, right? You can't just trust it's on the internet in order, like BitChat, I think, will not investigate the internet. We'll only investigate the Bluetooth chips that it finds nearby, right? So if you wanted to spoof, you need to like physically get a Bluetooth chip nearby, which then is arguably not even spoofing.
And to be clear, I'm not clear on this. So I'm assuming BLE is Bluetooth. Is that right?
Bluetooth.
So if that's the case, if you're going and traveling around the world, like to Argentina or something, that's not happening over Bluetooth anymore. That's happening via Nostra relays, correct?
Right.
So you're using like the traditional internet to be able to, so I don't see, if you're using the traditional internet to be able to connect to a Nostra relay, then you could use like more of like a VPN to spoof, no? Like you can't spoof over the mesh, but you could spoof if you're doing internet to Nostr.
But what are you spoofing at that point?
Your location. So I could download a VPN on my app. Say I'm in Buenos Aires and whatever.
Right. But if you're only connecting to people around you with your Bluetooth, you won't be in, like if you create a distinction between people who are part of the Bluetooth mesh right. and people who are otherwise favorited by people and those are connecting over the internet
yes.
or that you're connecting via a geo hash, that's all application logic that you could use to
okay.
meet the behavior or spaces you want.
So two quick things that just jumped in my mind that are exciting. One, to be clear what I'm saying with the Web of Trust stuff and all this, like spoofing is one specific example. I think my broader point though is like you can build like different icons to show different things. Like you could have different badges where it's like DK yep. was one of the first people to connect in whatever, the Presidio Bitcoin mesh and whatever, you could show like he's currently in SF or he's not based on this. But like the point is, like,
recreate Foursquare.
Yeah, exactly. You can recreate Foursquare. And because this is all open source, right? Again, and using Nostr, you could have like a ton of different apps showing different interfaces. So you could just do a Foursquare on this. Another thing that I would like to see, because we keep saying geo hashing, whatever reason, I keep thinking geocaching. How badass would it be if we start doing geocaching where people are just like dropping Bitcoin around the world? Like that could really catch on. Like I would love to see that. If someone wanted to do either like a Pokemon Go or like just a, you guys talked to someone doing that a while ago, or a geocache where you just like literally hide Bitcoin or some cool thing around the world. Like that would be dope.
Wait, how is it hidden? Is it tied to somebody else's Bluetooth device?
I don't know, but you could just say like, hey guys, just
put a Bluetooth transmitter somewhere.
Yeah. Or I like, you know, because you can zoom out the super local all the way up to the state or national level. You'd be like, I'll tell you it's in like this state, but that's it. Find it.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing we talked a little bit about is BitChat, like an application platform.
Yes.
If you wanted to create an application, like which layer do you plug in, whatever. I think that would be interesting to explore in general and maybe at the design week as well, that could be an exploration. Because there's probably a million ideas what to do, but if we cram it all into one app,
agreed,
then it kind of feels like, you know, WeChat or something, or maybe Elon's vision for X being an everything app. But there's trade-offs with an everything app. Things that matter to you get buried, etc. And maybe AI is the new interface. But it would be interesting to, you know, what should be the direction of BitChat as a platform versus a singular application.
I love it. Another good hackathon too.
Yep. And then
we have no
another direction is like, yeah, how could an AI prompt be part of it as well?
What do you mean?
Well, just like at the proto launch,
yep.
they showed the Fleet software mm-hmm. having like an AI prompt.
You just, oh yeah.
Like prompt it with speaking to it or text if you have a question. Right.
I mean, one,
it's like a whole new interface. Instead of like clicking menus and icons and tabs to access functionality, you just tell it what you want.
So one immediate thought that comes is when we're saying BitChat as a development platform, it's almost like saying in the background, it's like Noster plus this like mesh network piece as a development platform, but it actually has adoption, which is the key. It's like so hard to actually get adoption. And I kind of see like the world, you know, quickly siphoning off. So to the tweet you shared from Elon that we mentioned, where he says the phone basically just becomes your interface for everything in the world, like you're talking to it. I could easily see a world where it's like the companies that create the supermodels or whatever, like they probably each have their interface for that. So Google will have one, X will have one, maybe OpenAI, Microsoft or whatever, a couple of those. But each of those
are four. Supermodels, are you referring to amazing LLMs or more of an Elon flavor of supermodel?
Take your pick.
Okay. His AI.
Yeah, exactly. I was in fact thinking very well-trained models. But again, take your pick. However, the broader point I'm saying is like, we need an open version of this too. And, you know, I love for a long time, you know, Primal and Million was always talking about like, think about, you know, what he's trying to build is the open version of X. And I think that applies not just to Primal, but to Noster as an ecosystem. And I just view BitChat as an extension of that. I view BitChat as Noster with some additional awesome features and adoption, which is great. And so, yeah, I increasingly think, what does it look like where, again, going back to that vision of the software apps and the information, you can access this whole, basically you create a giant database of the world that's open, read, write. The only requirement is you need a public private key to conform with the standard. And beyond that, you can do whatever the hell you want with any of this. And that's beautiful because then you can have people listed on there, agents, you can have, but it's all using the web of trust filter. So the things that really matter are, you know, the model that you use to access all this stuff and do things with it, and the identity piece. And as long as you know, and the identity and the algorithms that come with that to surface specific identities, as long as you have that, this to me seems like the jumping off point for the sort of truly open AI platform or open AI ecosystem, whatever you want to call it, open source AI ecosystem.
Yeah. And I like the way, you know, all of that stuff works for me, but I also like, you know, I think there's something to study or learn from BitChat, which is BitChat uses Noster like its infrastructure, and it doesn't say, hey, go sign up for a Noster account. Kind of just does that in the background. And I think ultimately Noster is infrastructure more so than like a collection of applications. But I think BitChat's maybe one of the first examples we've seen where the app is built with that assumption instead of like, hey, go generate your private keys. You know, it's kind of more like, here's a service, do this thing you want to do. And I could imagine that same framing could be taken to like an LLM chat experience, which is just like, here's a thing, you can use it and don't worry about the fact that it happens to use Noster, but Noster gives you a lot of advantages as infrastructure for this.
Yeah, 100% agree. So I guess for me, the summary of where things are at with BitChat, I get excited about all the possibilities. I get worried though that if they all get crammed into the app, that it muddies the waters and then it's like a crappy app for everything and everyone.
Yep.
So I think there needs to be a lot of discipline there. Maybe BitChat as a platform allows for that exploration while keeping things siloed. Yes. I don't know. But I really like the mesh network and Noster connections, and I just hope that these new geo hashes head in the right direction, the wrong direction. I mean, one thing we talked about prior to the show, if there's a quorum of people who are actually at a location, then that can give it enough authenticity so that location, that the quality there is good. And if you mix in like what we said earlier, if you're not actually there, then you have sort of read access, but not write access. Maybe having visual distinctions on the icon next to people's names, et cetera. I think that treatment is important.
Yeah, I love all that.
And just to clarify, I think if you're not there, the default, if you're just kind of browsing, might be nice to be read-only. But in my case, I'm not at Presidio Bitcoin right now, but there is a Presidio Bitcoin member who has favorited me. So even though I'm not present, maybe I can participate in the real chat. Because I think ultimately we're just trying to say, can you recreate the norms or standards around who gets to talk where versus necessarily saying everybody you know, has to be in the same place in order to chat with each other, right? Because like the Nostra mutual favoriting already is sort of a dipping the toe in the water outside of that, you know, core restriction that was the initial part of it. But I'm wondering too, do we know, I'd asked a while back and I never got a lot of clarity on this. I don't know if you guys have heard more recently, but do we know sort of is the, I assume the protocol is just open, it's just open source software and stuff. If somebody wanted to write their own BitChat client, ByteChat or MaxChat or something, and wanted to have a different set of features or a different take on how it works, but integrate with the mesh networking or sort of the messaging system of BitChat. Do we know if that's like possible today or if it's restricted or limited somehow?
It's a great question. I mean, I assume because it's using the white noise protocol, like anyone could be able to build something that's interoperable, but I don't know. We should figure that out for next week.
I haven't checked it. It wouldn't surprise me if early on, at least, maybe the binary only accepts things signed by that binary or something just to try to keep it a little clean. But in the longer run, I'd hope that there's some way to decide what other apps can participate in those messaging channels. Because it does seem like if you can take some of these ideas, experiment with them outside without sort of muddying the waters. Like if you want to try these like location geohash things and let everybody talk or let nobody talk or only people who are there, you can sort of mix and match different takes on that. If that was more of an experimental surface, then you could let those experiments play out and the good ones could be incorporated in the more broadly distributed apps and the bad ideas can sort of fade away.
I would just like to throw back out to the ideas. We've mentioned this before, but that I would love to see, and maybe this is something we can actually explore further in the design week. But when using BitChat as a development platform, the two things that jump out to me again, local Bitcoins, someone make local Bitcoins on BitChat. This is going to be awesome. And it's going to be really important in the future. And the compute marketplace. Like I could see something where, because to your point, you're like someone actually has to compile and run the code. And we've talked about all the advantages of having an open marketplace as things get, as restrictions come down all around the internet. Imagine you could say, well, I need to run whatever, this operation, I need to do this thing. But in El Salvador, I know there's a server there that will do this thing because they're okay with that. But maybe, you know, it's similar to VPNs today. I think that that's going to be very interesting.
Yep. Cool. Any more topics on BitChat that we want to address?
It's just exciting to see it has adoption. You know, it's rare. So
cool. Well then, you know, let's move on topics then. I think we had, I mean, geez, there was so much stuff here. I think we have in the title, what do we have in the title? We have stablecoin stuff. Was there we've had discussions in the past on stablecoins. And we have these comments around like discuss various platforms which will win, ETH, Tron, Sol, Base, Arc, Tempo, Spark, Taproot assets, discuss various issuers that will win. Do you guys have sort of an entry point for what you're excited about this week?
Well, we talked last week about, we gave a brief summary of Tempo and Arc, which are two new layer one blockchains, primarily for stablecoins.
Steve came out as an L1 maximalist.
Yep. So we teed that up last week, but we didn't really go deep into stablecoins, so we can go deep right now. You know, I think I forget if we talked about this in the show, but I think the two of you spoke with someone, one of our colleagues and friends, who asserted that Tether on Tron has already won, and won in a way that it would be a monopoly, basically.
Kind of unassailable. Just move on. Don't fight over that battle anymore. Yeah.
And I find that, I mean, clearly it's true that it's number one right now. Tether is number one as the issued stablecoin, and Tether on Tron, that pair, is number one. So that's a fact. We can all look at the data. I find it like super unlikely though, that it like gets near 100% market share and everything else loses. Because all we see right now is an explosion of new stablecoin issuance and platforms. And then it's a combinatorial you know, from there, like the all the different pairs. And I think we're only, like with the Genius Act, we're only going to see more. Like
we see explosion of creation, but do we see explosion of usage of these other ones?
Well,
not yet, but
we'll see. Like we just saw, I think in the past week, I think it was Wyoming, the state of Wyoming or some kind of like governmental body within Wyoming issued their own stablecoin. And the Genius Act is a framework that supports that. So banks, governments, state level, federal level in the U.S., all will be creating stablecoins.
Can we just pause for a second? What do we imagine that would enable or support? Or like, what is it like if I were a citizen of Wyoming or like a resident that I could go to my bank, put in fiat dollars and get the stablecoin? But what do I do with it? Do I pay other Wyoming people or is it interchangeable? When I go to Buenos Aires, I can pay for stuff so interchanged with Tron and, you know.
So I'll start with like, I'll share like the high level benefits and then we can talk about the challenges to get there, like interoperability being the real big challenge. But setting aside challenges, what does a digital dollar give you over traditional dollars? First of all, 24/7 settlement. You don't have to, you don't have like bank holidays and stuff like that. You can exchange money anytime you want and you can do it anywhere you want. So like your example, you can go to, did you say Argentina or whatever, and pay someone in dollars just from your mobile app. So I think that's the high level vision that anyone or everyone has around stablecoins. And like, if I'm using like a JP Morgan stablecoin and I go to Argentina and they're using Tether on Tron, or if that's what their wallet receives, if I can pay them and not have to worry about those details, that would be amazing. Then right. Everyone's paying each other in dollars around the world. But
in a sense, if we want interoperability and 24/7 settlement, why don't we just all converge on one?
Yeah, well, because business reasons, right? So like
people want that sweet, sweet yield.
Like, I mean, if you're JP Morgan or something, like any other company, you don't like already Tether's like making insane profits, right? So if I'm a bank, I want those profits. Like if I have a huge customer base and I'm giving my customer base that I've acquired, my customer base, digital dollars, why do I want to give all the profits to Tether or Circle or Coinbase or another company?
And for people that don't know, when Steve's talking about the profits, like what they're doing is they're holding treasuries on the back end, which pays whatever 4 or 5% at least now, and their users get access to dollars. So they're literally like when Tether is just printing billions of dollars, they're literally just holding treasuries. It's like in some ways since Google, the greatest business model in the last 20 years.
So it's more profitable on a per employee basis, right?
Yeah.
And again, I mean, what we talked about last week, I think the obvious answer, why is Stripe and Paradigm working on a new layer one Tempo that's intended to be a stablecoin layer one? They don't want Coinbase's base to run away with being right. The underlying platform. So there's competition for the platform and then the stablecoin issuance on top. And we'll see, like it's unclear. At both layers, it's unclear how competitive it'll ultimately be. It's very competitive now in terms of like lots of options. But we'll see how much consolidation there is for each. And obviously, if you're in the lead right now, you are unlikely to be investing in technologies that make it interoperable. Although having said that, even Tether, who has the lead...
Yeah.
They've issued Tether on Bitcoin and then Ethereum and then Tron and Solana. And now they're coming back to, or they're exploring coming back to Bitcoin on Taproot Assets on their own RGB-based system. And who knows if they're exploring on Spark as well. But like Tether clearly has shown they're agnostic to underlying platform. And they need to provide interoperability between all those if they want to create a good customer experience. So even they're incentivized to do that.
Yeah, it seems like they would feel a little bit trapped by Tron, right? Like they don't want to be stuck on Tron.
Totally. It's not theirs.
But I worry, like, so I asked why should there be a lot of these? And you mentioned, well, JP Morgan wants to, you know, they have their customer base and they want to capture the sweet, sweet yield. But like, if I'm a customer of JP Morgan, why do I want to take some stablecoin that's not really useful anywhere?
Well, I mean, we can get into interoperability, but I mean, if we assume a world in which there's interoperability, then the customer doesn't even have to know about that, think about that, or worry about that. It just works. And why would they pick JP Morgan Digital Dollar over Tether? Well, if I'm a JP Morgan customer, number one, I've probably never heard of Tether. Number two, if I've heard of it, I've read all this horrible FUD and it sounds like some kind of scam, right? So there's tons of people who either have no brand affinity to it or are scared of it. Mm-hmm. And I've been a 30-year customer at JP Morgan or whatever. Which one am I going to choose? Obviously, I'm going to trust JP Morgan. They're my bank. They've been my bank mm-hmm. my whole life. To me, that seems obvious why they'd pick.
But it seems obvious why they would choose to do it if interoperability is solved. But at the point interoperability is solved, it also seems like less important where you got them, really. Like, so yes, you have a relationship with JP Morgan, but will JP Morgan be able to capture excess profits if these are fully interchangeable in commodity?
Well, they have a large, well, for the reasons I just said. I mean, if they have a huge customer base and they'll just capture their existing customer base and whoever other customers they have.
I mean,
they won't necessarily like win a new customer because they have JP Morgan coin.
Right.
They'll capture customers for all the other reasons they capture customers. And then as far as interoperability, I mean, Stripe paid $1 billion for Bridge.xyz.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That is an interoperability solution. Circle has an interoperability solution for USDC. I actually don't know offhand if Tether has one with as part of their wallet development kit, WDK, but I assume they do, at least within their own family of Tether. And then there's anytime you get $1 billion acquisition from Stripe, I'm sure there's like a dozen startups that are trying to do some kind of bridge solution as well. And then if you look at Taproot Assets and Spark, they both also offer interoperability. Because if you're Taproot Assets or Spark, those are platforms that are trying to compete, enter the game. They have no market share right now. It's early. So they obviously need to promote interoperability because they need to interoperate with USDC on Base, for example.
Yeah.
Like a bridge.xyz, do they interoperate like both the stablecoin and the underlying L1, or do they interoperate one or the other or both?
In theory, it can be both. I think Bridge.xyz is both, but I'm not quite certain. But certainly in theory, and definitely Taproot Assets can do both. I think technically, if it's custodial, then if it's all this is done on a server, it's like quite easy to do technically. There's going to be middlemen and fees and stuff like that. There's going to be regulatory scrutiny and concerns, like can Taproot Assets or Spark or any of these remain KYC free is a big question, because regulators might go to any of those, whether you call it a bridge or DEX or exchange or swap or whatever word you want to call it. Like if I have stablecoin X on platform, P1, and I'm trading with you, and you have stablecoin Y on P2. Somehow that has to get converted. There's a variety of solutions there, but regulators can go to whoever's doing those swaps and be like, "Hey, this is an MSB. This feels and looks and smells like an MSB. Mm-hmm. I'm calling it an MSB. You need to be licensed and you need to KYC." And seems inevitable to me.
Honestly, the more I see all this, it's a very interesting set of like incentives and tensions here, right? Because like, for example, right, you've got Stripe, they pay $1 billion to do Bridge. In theory, Bridge exists just to swap between the different stablecoins. But now Stripe is going to launch their own L1. I don't know if they're going to do their own stablecoin next on top of that. Remains to be seen. But that's like pretty big tension with their acquisition of Bridge. And so honestly, the way I see more and more of this playing out, this actually just hearing you describe like that, making me more bullish on Bitcoin as the swap or interoperability layer in the long run, because these all just feel like different intranets, just like all the different cryptocurrencies again, right? Like, you know, maybe they'll start with interoperability, but there will certainly be fights where, you know, okay, you're not giving me enough of my juice between Stripe coin and Tether. And so, oh, sorry, interoperability is lost. And that's just like a worse customer experience. So I don't know exactly how this is going to flow, and maybe the first round, and also like what happens like for the long tail, like, you know, maybe there's not a ton of users on whatever, some new stablecoin that gets launched. Maybe there's like 1,000, and maybe there's 1,000 of those, and those start aggregating over time. I think somehow, and also the sort of gray market use cases, right? So like maybe you've got your Stripe coin, and you know, Stripe is being fully compliant, but like all of a sudden the UK says, actually, sorry, like, you know, you can't make your donation to Alex Jones or whatever the next like controversial thing is. People are like, what the fuck? I thought I had a dollar. Yeah, exactly. PBJ. And so I don't know, like, I don't know exactly how it's going to roll, but it, again, the beauty of Bitcoin is internet versus intranet. And so I don't know if it's going to be, the first step of that is centralized, where it's just like Bridge or someone actually just runs a Bitcoin or Lightning node, and they can swap in and out of Taproot assets and all these, you know, whatever L1 stable coins. Maybe that's step one. But it feels like on a 10 plus year time horizon, internet always wins, open wins. Like there's just going to continually be new restrictions placed on the regulated stable coins, and not just government restrictions. There's just going to be like sort of mafioso style battles between these companies. Whereas anyone that can like route through Bitcoin, it'll just work. So I don't know how that's going to happen, but internet over intranet.
It feels to me like there's just so many competing business interests that I just have a hard time seeing how everyone's going to be like cool with Tether being the only issuer. Like whether you're Stripe or Coinbase or JP Morgan's of the world, to just like hand over that to Tether so that trillions of dollars is all on Tether, and that one company would be making like hundreds of billions of dollars of profits a year or more.
What? I think the question is,
I find that very hard to believe. So these other very large, powerful actors are going to compete with that. And I just find it hard to believe that somehow the user experience leads to no swaps or bridges and everyone's using Tether on Tron. I think there will be swaps and bridges. Lots of people are working on it. And because of that, it will be a solved problem. And then people are going to use whatever product is most a natural fit for them.
One more request for product that, or business, I've been hoping to see for a very long time. Someone still needs to build Lightning Network bridges between any of these Bitcoin chains that support HTLCs and Bitcoin. Because even if, you know, some of these chains don't want to participate in swaps, as long as they support HTLCs, there's a huge opportunity here to build that interoperability layer between Bitcoin and any of these chains. I don't know if Stripe or any of those guys will support HTLCs or not, but if they do, that's a huge opportunity. Someone should build that company. And if you do, send me a message.
Cool. Yeah. And just for the record here, I'm not claiming that I believe USDT Tron is the only solution, but it feels like if there are going to be others, there's a lot to navigate here. And it feels like maybe new use cases that show up are more likely to be the places where there's space for them. Or like the existing use cases, I think the existing use cases, you know, maybe Global South use cases probably work well enough for the time being. So you kind of need, I think, new use cases to come in. Like I have dabbled in stablecoins out of curiosity, but I never used them for anything. And so is there somebody like JP Morgan who would help reveal a use case to me? I'm guessing this is the same for you guys. You probably never actually use them, right? Like you've dabbled. Steve and I have sent some back and forth like years ago, but we don't actually do any. Something like it was Tether and or USDC on various L1s. So I remember the reason I remember it is because it was so surprisingly hard to do anything you wanted to do. You're like, because you have to know, oh, Tether, but it's Tether on top of Polygon or, you know, some other L1. So you kind of have to know that pair. And then that kind of makes the whole experience really bad. So my point is not that USDT on Tron wins everything at all times. I think USDT on Tron wins at what it's doing, which is kind of a newly emergent kind of Global South use case of a dollar-like thing. But like we don't have any stable coins really integrated into our lives. And so I think the opportunity, if there are new things, it's to serve sort of new use cases. I think we're one example of a new use case that is underserved or not served well by the, you know, if we need 24/7 settlement. But yeah, just how it's all going to play out, it's kind of fascinating, hard to predict. I don't feel like I have a silver bullet prediction for how this thing is gonna turn. Do you guys?
Andy has an interesting point. He's saying in the chat, Argentina leads the region in terms of cryptocurrency value received, which I assume is primarily Tether, at estimated 91.1 billion, only slightly ahead of Brazil's estimated 90.3 billion. If that's true, I mean, those are pretty big numbers. So I guess kind of gets to your point that maybe there's going to be network effects in different use cases. I think the question is also going to be like, okay, well, you know, if Stripe has a shit ton of merchants too, right? So they have a clear network effect. So maybe it's kind of like the US bifurcates and like they're either going to use Circle or Stripe's coin. Global South uses Tether. I want to see who's going to build the stable coins for the AIs, which is your
point. How does the Stripe, I mean, I get Stripe, big payment network, a lot of different, you know, UIs that they could expose, but I'm trying to imagine, how does the Stripe stablecoin work? Like, do they get a merchant, you know, surfacing the stablecoin on Tempo, and then I come to it with a temp? Like, do I have some wallet then that pays that way, or can I just use Apple Pay and it kind of converts to the stablecoin? Or like,
yeah,
because I feel like owning a network like that without the use case necessarily demanding a stablecoin, I'm not sure. I just see where that bridge, if you can pardon.
So imagine a world where everyone has a stablecoin wallet on their phone, and then they go to a website or some kind of, they want to make a purchase and they're presented with Stripe. Instead of paying with Visa, they pay with their mobile wallet.
We need to imagine in a world where I start carrying around a stablecoin in some mobile wallet, right? Like that, sure. To me, that feels
Trust Wallet has like hundreds of millions of downloads. And while that's his Trust Wallet and MetaMask and Phantom, that's more like gambling casino use case. But I mean, like, you can definitely imagine a world where there's hundreds of millions, billions of people that have a wallet with stablecoin.
Well, I guess
those mostly overlapping with the BA and, you know, yeah.
Exactly.
The poof, yeah.
So, and I think this was our mutual friend's point, is like the people that would download a stablecoin wallet are the people in the Global South. So I think his point is you have network effects in countries like Argentina and Brazil where people actually want and need dollars. Why would any of us download a stablecoin wallet? I'm not saying that we wouldn't, but like we have Apple Pay. And maybe they can integrate with Apple Pay, but like unless there's some new thing that we can only get with the stablecoin, right? Like,
because I can use Apple Pay even when the banks are closed. I have 24/7 access to pay whoever I want with Apple Pay. Right.
Yeah. Right.
But how sophisticated of you?
I mean, it's similar to the Bitcoin pitch for merchants, cut out Visa. Like, you want to cut out these exorbitant fees, right? So
I get why they want to cut out Visa. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you unlock billions or trillions of dollars, then you can.
But why does it? So I get that from the merchant perspective, but the user doesn't even know how any of this works.
Well, the merchant can give discounts.
Like a rebate or something?
It always comes back to this discount thing, which is what people have been saying for Bitcoin for a long time with payments too. And if that actually starts happening, cool. But even then, I wonder, like, is saving 2% enough to like, okay, I'll give you an example. I've been going to this grocery store next to my house recently, and they have really good, clean tasting coconut water. And I'm buying a lot of coconut water. I'm finding I feel a lot better after all my saunas with these clean electrolytes. And they have like a rewards program. And I get a tiny little bit, a couple percentage points of cash back. And I keep thinking, you know, I should download that, get a couple percent. And then I'm just like, nah, I don't want to like fuck with the app and all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know.
But I mean, sure, I have examples like that too, where I don't waste my time. But like, clearly people spend an enormous amount of time with like credit cards and points back and dollars back. And like, there's tons of resources on the internet to compare all these cards.
Yeah.
And like a few basis points matters. I mean,
but I feel like
clearly a lot of demand for saving money through that.
That's fair. But I feel like how many people, like, I feel like people in our circles probably do that. Like people that are like really into research, but like, no, and I guess, and maybe they represent.
It's a mainstream thing.
Is it?
Yeah. I think there is a mainstream thing.
And also same with discounts. And same with discounts.
Like maybe the reason you don't hassle with it anymore is because you don't care about a few dollars here and there.
Max is too rich.
You're valuing.
We're talking about getting a quarter saved.
You're valuing your time more than a few dollars, but tons of people like value. I mean, the reason why there's these discount at these stores is very popular, very mainstream. Mm.
I think the rewards programs and, you know, optimizing credit cards is like a hobby of a lot of people. Like people love that stuff, even though I think it's mostly irrational.
They're very like, it's a particular personality.
Yeah. Austin was mentioning you can put $200K on Coinbase and get 4% on your credit card now.
What do you mean 200K on Coinbase?
That sounds really mainstream.
Yeah.
4% on 200K, okay.
Putting $200,000 into Coinbase? Why doesn't everyone do that? That's very mainstream. Everyone has an extra 200K to throw onto Coinbase.
I think he's saying 200K Bitcoin, aka sats.
I think it's probably
$200,000.
I'm joking.
Okay. If you put $200,000 on Coinbase, then you can get 4% back.
Interesting. Which,
that almost is like a little bit at odds.
This guy doesn't know the price of a gallon of milk.
Rich people care less about the points back.
I feel like I should just say, I am actually quite cheap. You guys know I'm very cheap.
Yeah, we know you're cheap.
I'm extremely cheap, but believe me, I know the price. Well, I don't know the price of a gallon of milk because I don't drink milk, but anyways, whatever.
Hive Mind's doing better than we knew.
I'm lazy. If anything, I'm lazy.
The hippie VC. Okay. Stablecoins, more commentary. Did you guys have anything else on this topic? I know we got 15 minutes before we hit.
Let me ask you guys, same topic, but just a different angle. Let's say whether you're a startup building a new product, like a new wallet, or you're at some fintech company or whatever, and you decide stablecoins, that they're important. We need a stablecoin strategy. We're going to do stablecoins. What does that mean then? What do you do? What do you do when you add stablecoins? Which issuance? Which platforms?
Yeah, sounds a lot like we need a blockchain strategy.
But how do you think through that and decide?
Jeez, I mean, I don't know. I feel like a lot of it is like, who is the customer of this business? What are the use cases where that customer would change behavior for a different pricing scheme, right? So that's why I feel like we have to answer this question, we have to really think through the details. It's not just, stablecoins are big, let's do stablecoins, which I think is kind of what's happening in the market. Everybody's like, we want a piece of that action. Tether? How are you just going to let Tether run away with all that yield? We want some of the yield. Piece. I get it. You want the yield, but how are you going to get the yield? Well, the only way you really do this sustainably is to create value for people. So if now you're in charge of like the blockchain group or the stablecoin group, I think the big question is like, who are our customers? What do they want? What kinds of incentives could we get them to do something that they don't naturally want, but that we want, and try to make that whole thing fit together? And to be honest, I don't know that I'm super convinced that I think it would be hard for a U.S. business running Stripe to have a really compelling offering for why I should carry digital dollars and pay them with digital dollars. I feel like Apple Pay is a fine solution. I think you can get credit cards that get you cash back and stuff like that. So I'm like skeptical that there's just like a really good silver bullet answer here. But I think it's got to be like, where are you creating value for your customers? And then you can maybe share some of that value to get your customers to do something that they don't otherwise naturally want to do.
All right. So,
as long as you don't break the law with the Genius Act.
Right.
But there's probably ways around that.
If I were asked for my company, what would be my stablecoin strategy? I would start by saying, let's buy Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The stablecoin strategy.
Exactly. And seriously, that's a stretch. Exactly. Wow, very, very, very well played.
I think that's an interesting new market, let's say, right? Like, actually, I don't hold U.S. dollars, but if I did, I would rather hold them in a stretch yielding money market like fund. And so you could imagine somebody who is interested in holding U.S. dollars would be attracted to that kind of thing. And if you can say, hey, look, we're going to take our major competitors getting all this yield instead of that, use our stable coins and get 9% yourself. I think
yes.
Maybe 2% sounds kind of small, but I think Stretch is paying 9%. So if there were a Stretch stablecoin,
I would switch for that.
I think a lot of people who are interested in holding dollars, I wouldn't count myself among that. But I think if you're interested in holding dollars, I think a Stretch stablecoin would be a very different value prop, which doesn't try to compete directly with the Tether, you know, on Tron value prop.
I agree 100%. And honestly, like I think the biggest threat to Tether right now is MicroStrategy paying 9%. 2%, maybe not. Like if MicroStrategy can pay you a lot, like yes, that starts.
And I guess if Global South right now, I think the contention would be
yes.
That it's already a network effect, already have entrenched habits, already have wallets, et cetera. I think people maybe wouldn't change just for like a little bit of yield split. But if it felt like they were giving up a lot of yield split, I think in that case, Tether on Tron may be disruptible. But my guess is it kind of enters, you know, sly roundabout way, not straight
exactly
through the front door.
So the other thing I just want to mention, so I agree 100%. So I meant this unironically. If someone actually asked me for the stablecoin strategy, I would say it's buy Bitcoin instead. I think Stripe would be much better served just buying Bitcoin than trying to get the stablecoin wars, but so be it.
Max wants everybody to be a treasury company. I mean, we don't have enough.
So be it. Well, again, treasury company, let's say right. In the block style,
profits. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I just think
that always gets lost in conversations. You guys are doing a better job framing it that way, but everyone else, they lump it all together. And it's extremely different strategy.
100% different strategy.
It only exists to hold Bitcoin, or does it exist to serve another business purpose? And then it chooses to hold the treasury and Bitcoin.
How about this? I'm gonna sort of diverge and say, if you're just putting your profits in Bitcoin, I'm just going to say, just use Bitcoin as a savings technology. It's not a treasury company. You're just using Bitcoin for what it's intended as. You're just using it as a savings technology. So if I were running Stripe, I would tell them, guys, let's start, you know, stop trying to find the next Stellar Lumen and let's just save in Bitcoin because it works. Okay. So that would be number one. Number two.
I have a response to that, but I'll wait.
This is just my take. Number two, I think the most likely thing to pop would be tokenizing or whatever the Stretch, 9%, even 5%. That's something really interesting. But I think if I were thinking longer term, as we've discussed with Bitcoin payments as well, to your point, DK, I love the way you frame this. In general, for any business conversation, I hate when people are always like, yeah, let's start with like, where can we make some money? It's like, that's so dumb. It's like, what can we actually offer to the world? And then if we do a good job of that, we can make some money on it. Cool. And so the two areas that I would be really focused on, one, remittances. There's a lot of people in the U.S. sending a lot of money back home. I just realized, do you guys know how big the remittance flows to Guatemala right now? I know Mexico is huge, but even
I don't know the number.
Yeah. $20 billion a year right now. It's been exploding. Okay. If I can get stablecoin users, Guatemalans or Mexicans in the United States, cool. There's a real use case there. Boom. That's one example. For people like you, me, and DK, I would say something with stablecoins for AI. Why? Because the bots are never going to work for Apple Pay or Visa or like these like antiquated ACH, whatever, old school things. So I don't know what that answer is, but I would be going all in on just like sponsoring tons of hackathons, getting people to use my stablecoin with AI. Yeah. And that's all I would focus on.
Yeah, I feel like that's a great example of a new use case where people may not get Bitcoin or care about Bitcoin, but they get dollars. And if they can use a digital dollar to have their AIs pay each other, that I think that's a great example of a new use case. So that to me feels like an area where you could disrupt. But then again, if you're just in charge of the stablecoin arm of another existing business, that may not make sense with the existing business, right?
So a couple of things. One, I looked up Stretch, and for people wondering what we're talking about, STRC, stock ticker symbol. It's trading at $95.05 right now. So it is below the... they want it to be 100, right? They want it to be stable. It hit as low as 92 in the past week. So it's up to 95.
Do we know
as high as 98.
Is that good for yield? Like if you buy it at 92?
Well, their ideal world, they started at 9% to test the market. Because if it can be $100, trade at $100,
and offer 9%, that's great news for them. In fact, maybe they'd even raise the percentage then. But if it's trading at 95, that's not stable. So they will need to lower, or they may need to lower the interest rate. No, lower the interest rate.
Wouldn't it be raised because they want more people to buy the instrument? So if they're offering 9%, if they offer 10%, I'm more likely to buy the instrument.
No, I think people are trading it down because they don't, of the risk concern that they won't be able to pay it off.
Right. But wouldn't you need to like sweeten the pot by paying a higher interest rate to get people to still take that extra risk? Like what I'm saying is, like, if we're trading over $100, then they would lower the interest rate because, oh, we don't need to pay 9%. We could pay 5%. But if it's trading below $100 at 9%, then they need to try 10 or 11, which is crazy to me. But that's my take.
What's your take, DK?
Yeah. I would guess the pricing is obviously set by the market. There's just bids and asks, right? So the reason it's not 100 is because people don't want to own it at 100 if it's only paying out $9 per. My question is, when the bidding goes down to 92, does it still pay out $9 or does it pay out 9% of 92? I think it still pays out $9.
I think it pays out $9. So my point is, if people aren't buying it, if I pay you $10, then 11, like there's some, I mean, there's some rate at which those two things will match.
We should look it up later though, as to whether it's a fixed absolute amount.
All this finance, fiat finance talk is hurting my head.
I agree, man. I can't wait till stable coins and everything is just gone. Like one day there will be an energy-backed currency that we all use and we can drop this lunacy nonsense.
The other thing I wanted to comment on though is back to the Stripe example.
That was partially tongue-in-cheek, by the way. But I
just wanted to respond. Your first point about Stripe, they should just hold Bitcoin. In isolation, sure, that's fine. But I think it's apples to oranges. Like what they're trying to do is stable. Like currently they have a big business based on TradFi. If they see a world in which things move from dollars and Visa to dollars and stablecoins, if they don't latch onto that world and they stay in the old world, their profits are going to go to zero and then they'll have no profits to put into Bitcoin. So that's a failed direction. If they see a world moving to stablecoins and they embrace that, they make a lot of fees and profits off of that. They can still put it in Bitcoin. So it seems they seem orthogonal to me.
I was mostly being tongue in cheek. However, I will say that
you're just waiting for my response.
However, I will say it reminds me just a little bit, like, and honestly, I'll just say this: like, increasingly, Stripe to me is just like a Coinbase. They had the chance to be a generational company. They already are. I think they're going to squander it. Same as Coinbase. Like, yeah, Coinbase made a lot of fees trading shitcoins. And he could have been Michael Saylor, or as Alex said, he could have built the next JP Morgan instead. He's going to stay Caesars. And now they're starting to gobble up some Bitcoin, but, you know, 15 years too late or whatever it's been. They're going to do fine. Coinbase is going to be fine. They're going to stick around. My point is just like, play fiat games, win fiat prizes. It is what it is.
Speaking of casinos, just reminded me of a conversation I was having. Did you see, and this is not a casino, but it might run the risk if it were to launch such a feature. So I wanted to get your guys' real-time feedback on this. You guys are Lava users, customers, investors, demo beta users or something, right? Familiar with the interface?
Are you trying to like out us on something? Nice try.
No.
I've heard of Lava.
You've heard of Lava. You're familiar with what it is. So you can deposit Bitcoin. You can get a loan in stablecoin dollars.
Or in your bank account.
Well, you could get the loan in stablecoin dollars and then you can off-ramp it from stablecoin dollar to your bank account in whatever way you like. And some people take the stablecoins and use it to buy Bitcoin. So they're effectively depositing Bitcoin to get a loan in stablecoin to buy Bitcoin. So you can see there's a little circularity there. It's like a form of leverage. My question is, if you were in charge of Lava, would you try to support that behavior more and give more like simplification of that in the UI and help people do that and help people understand the risks or model out the flows? Or would you try to somehow prevent that or limit that kind of behavior?
I feel like I'm being put on the spot.
I know, this is a hot one.
But I mean, I think yes. I'm not. Today's use cases, I think, are leverage. I mean, leverage / shitcoin gambling. So you want to get a loan on your Bitcoin because you want to go gamble in Solana ecosystem or Ethereum and buy meme coins and try to moon and get leverage there. Or you're a Bitcoin maximalist, but you just want to grow your stack. You're willing to take that risk, which is the scenario you presented. So if we assume that's today's market and where the billions of dollars are being traded and not other markets yet, then if I'm starting a company that's in the mix there, I think the most wholesome way to do it while still making money would be to focus on the Bitcoin maximalists who want to lever up and do what you just said. Otherwise, you're probably in for a long road to wait for even more wholesome activities like getting a loan to buy a home or like a boat or your child's college expenses or whatever, or you have a sudden medical expense or something. Those
college, I think, wholesome again?
I think that'll be, I think that will become a very large business, but like over a 10 plus year period.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on what Shazan wants to do. I mean, I think I know these Bitcoiners are good, wholesome people, like the shitcoiners. Mm-hmm. Just kidding. There's plenty of degenerate Bitcoiners too. But I mean, on the one hand, I don't really think, you know, personally, it's like, it's not really any of my business what someone wants to do with their own money. And so if they want to do that, like, more power to them. I mean, I think it's obviously good to surface the risks and explain it. But like, I think an interesting story is in the early days, if I recall correctly, BitMEX got very, very little adoption on their platform until they were doing like 2x leverage or something. Then all of a sudden, when they offered 100x, they became a pretty big platform. And like, people are going to do what they're going to do. And obviously, this is not like that. And also, we have a question in the chat, like, how is this not capital gains? Like, we've talked about this a lot in the past. You can find some of these early episodes. But they use discrete lock contracts, DLCs. The Bitcoin's held in a contract, and you only get liquidated if it reaches a certain price. I'm of the view that this is just a loophole intended to keep the wealthy and connected, and now it's available to everyone. I don't like the laws, but it is what it is. The ability to take out loans against capital assets.
Oh.
But if I were Shazan and like that's what people want to use it for, I would probably allow them to use that. But I also have to say, I can see the opposite side of this. I really respect Alex at River, who's basically, I don't want to do any lending. It's just not the kind of business I want to build. So I could see going either way. It just depends on what he wants to do.
I also see no ethical issue with leverage to buy more Bitcoin. It can absolutely be irresponsibly done, but it also can be responsibly done.
Yeah.
If you're like in your early 20s, just starting your career, you don't really have that much money because you're just starting your career. But you have the conviction that, like, for example, we have about Bitcoin and like where you think it's going to go. Getting leverage to grow your stack, I think, whether it's 2x or 100x matters, right? But like some leverage,
yeah,
I think completely is reasonable because if it's a failed bet, you're young and you didn't even really risk that much money in the first place compared to your future earning power. So I don't think it's like an ethical quandary at all.
I think one way, and again, like I'm saying a lot of things tongue in cheek. I think ultimately people are adults and they can make up their own minds. It's not really my place to say or the company's place necessarily. Although it could be the company's place if they have a specific vision of the world, but that just comes down to the founder. Like I don't think Alex wants to do this, and I respect that. But I also don't think it's like a bad thing to offer it. So I think one thing you could do is you could have like potentially this could be interesting for Design Week. You could have a user interface or experience where you're allowed to take a loan against your Bitcoin to get more leverage, but there's just like a few like questions they ask you first. Like, for example, like, do you own any chairs? Or like, do you still have a kidney?
I thought you were going to suggest a Skibidi UI.
Max used to be married to help regulate this.
And you could have like a little kidney like figure, and it's like, if you still have a kidney, like we might suggest exploring that option first.
we should wrap up, but just to the last comment, which you spoke to already, but program scarcity says, I don't get how the Bitcoin loan companies work. They hold the private keys. How is that not considered a capital gains sell? Well, Max responded to that specifically with Lava solution, in which you the loan company, the lender, Lava is the intermediary and the lender. Neither of them have your private keys. They do not control your Bitcoin. So I think that solution is pretty airtight in terms of not being any kind of transaction of selling your Bitcoin. Other loan companies, I think it's more gray area. For example, with Coinbase, they turn your Bitcoin into CBDC, like their wrapped Bitcoin. And then it goes onto the Morpho chain, and like who knows how many layers deep it goes.
Yeah.
Not only are there all kinds of risks and scary things about that, but like, you know, none of us are accountants or lawyers. So who knows what the IRS treatment of that would be today or in the future, but it certainly would raise more questions than the Lava approach.
But it's less about the who holds the private keys, but it's really if you have a custodian that you entrust your Bitcoin to who holds your private keys, and then they do something else with your Bitcoin besides just hold it as Bitcoin. I think that's where the issue comes, because there's, you know, long history of custodians who hold assets and give you, you know, debt, you know, credit against those assets that let you get cash out. That's a very well understood area, even if the asset is fully transferred to the custodian. So it's not really about private keys, it's about like what they do with it.
I don't know. So I think if I understand what you're saying, DK, like if I own Tesla stock and the firm I hold that with, JP Morgan. People are thinking I'm actually not a JP Morgan customer, but I've played one on this show. So I hold it with JP Morgan, let's say, and they then rehypothecate it and will, you know, supply it to like short sellers, et cetera, and profit off of that. I think that's sort of what you're referring to. And that doesn't like cause me some tax event or something, but that's, that's different in that. Whereas it's different than the case with Coinbase and Bitcoin loans, because I have one asset called Bitcoin. I give it to Coinbase. Then they actually trade my Bitcoin for another asset,
right?
Wrapped Bitcoin, totally right. Different asset.
Yeah.
Like the Tesla stock is not traded to a different, like, you know, Rivian stock or something, right? Right.
Is that true? Do we know that?
I'm pretty sure JP Morgan does not trade Tesla stock for Rivian stock.
Well, but could they?
Not as an investment decision, right?
No, but if they're just like, I don't know, all day doing some kind of like short-term, high-frequency, I don't know if they are.
I think it is a good point you're making that even when you have a traditional custodian holding traditional kind of non-crypto assets, that they sometimes do other things with those assets. And so far, the history is, like, you know, the tax treatment on that is that it's not a taxable event. And my guess is a lot of that comes down to the fact that JP Morgan owes you the Tesla stock back because they did whatever they felt like with it. But as far as you're concerned, they showed it on your ledger in your account as Tesla stock, even if the Tesla stock got sold and rehypothecated 10 times over, right?
I think the honest answer to all of this is that all these questions, whenever you're dealing with banking or tax laws, it's all extremely arbitrary. And frankly, I would say all part of the pea and shell scam in which we have lived for a long time. And
tremendous amount of trust, yeah.
Tremendous amount of trust. Like, hey, I have a dollar with JP Morgan. Where all of a sudden did they get $10 to go and gamble with? Like, I don't know. And so I think increasingly, I'm glad that we're giving this superpower to hack the system to everyone now. But I look forward to a day where these silly pee and shell games are no longer. That's my day.
All right.
All right.
I think we got to call it.
We got to call it. We're over time.
Great all chat, right. Guys.
Yeah.
Good to see you guys again. Yep.
Good all bitching right. At you guys. Bye-bye.
I'll bit chat you on the interwebs.
Yeah. We'll bitch at you too, DK, even though you're not here.
Just favorite me so I can be part of your,
cool.
Part of your club.
Sweet.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Yeah.